So the point of this segment is, you know, Brad saw some of our the other episodes and, you know, said, you know, while we've had newly diagnosed individuals, we have never had anybody like fresh diagnosed, which is not easy to find, but it was easy to find you because you reached out. And so I just said, why don't you do it? Welcome to The Secret Life of Parkinson's, a podcast created by people living with Parkinson's to help break the stigma of a disease no one likes to talk about. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Krauser and Brian Baker. But so you have just been diagnosed this year. And I think that the whole point is to understand, I mean, because we've all been through it, but we kind of forget a little bit of like what you're dealing with right now and what you're going through. But before we do that, why don't you share a little bit of your background? Because what I've just seen on LinkedIn, you are in neuroscience.
Right now, I'm our interim vice president for research at my university. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was the director of our graduate program, which for us is the equivalent of the dean of graduate studies for the university. And that position also runs our neuroscience program. So, okay. So I am much more of a geneticist. My PhD is in genetics.
So having that background, or at least having
a head start.
Yeah. Like, is there anything that you knew or recognized, or what was your journey like so far?
Well, it is interesting because a couple of the neuroscientists in my program do mouse model Parkinson's research. So they're actively involved in doing different trials to try and see if they can alleviate or reduce the impacts of Parkinson's-like issues that they can induce in the mice. Mm. So I did have some aspect of it. I've also had intention tremors since the 90s.
What's that?
So instead of resting tremors, when I move, I have my tremors.
Okay.
So it's movement tremors instead of resting tremors. So
isn't that considered essential tremor, or at least that's what
essential? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Same thing.
So you had that for since the 90s, you said?
Yeah. And that made it really hard for me to think about having Parkinson's, because I've just assumed, oh, my tremors are getting worse, but mm-hmm. it's just, you know, essential tremors. And so I have no idea how long I've probably been really experiencing Parkinsonian tremors. But it's probably been much longer than I've actually been diagnosed. My wife kept telling me, your hands are getting worse. You need to go see a doctor. Your hands are getting worse. You need to go see a doctor. And I was like, it's nothing. It's just, it's the same thing it's always been. Mm-hmm. And so finally she got me to the point where I did contact our general practitioner. He put me in touch with a neurologist. Then they sent me through MRIs, DAT scans, swallow tests, mm-hmm. Nerve conduction tests, all of those type of things. So,
what other symptoms do you have?
Right now, the biggest one is hand tremor. Mm-hmm. I've got a pretty big hand tremor. I've got tremors in my calf. I've got some arm tremors. I've got some internal tremors mm-hmm. kind of up in here at times. I'm starting to get chin tremors. Mm-hmm. One of the oddest things is I'm rapidly learning that almost every single thing is a Parkinsonian symptom.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost every single thing that happens to me I can check off as age or Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And often both. So every night, 3 or 3:30, I wake up in the middle of the night, no matter what time I go to bed, and I'm awake for a good couple of hours. Mm-hmm. And then I manage to get fall back asleep for a tiny bit, and then we have to wake up and get ready for everything. I've got a little bit of a drag and stiffness in my leg, some stiffness in my neck, like to when I'm driving anymore, I don't turn my neck, I turn my try can to turn my whole that? Body so I can see that.
Mine yeah. comes see and goes.
He does that.
It comes and goes. Some days it came to me and it's random. So
yes.
it may come on it's dystonia basically in my neck.
Yeah.
And literally, like you said, like I have to use all the tools in my car to make sure the backup camera and everything else, because I can't turn my head to see if there's a car coming.
It's annoying, isn't it? And,
yeah.
You know, I'm of an age, certainly, that backup cameras were never a thing for the vast majority. I've had exactly one car with a camera in it. And so I am so used to trying to do that. And the weirdness is just, it feels like I don't understand why I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's, you're telling yourself, just do this.
Yeah.
But it won't. And that's a really, that's been one of my weirdest aspects of this, is not my body not doing what I'm telling it to do. And I know that I used to be able to do, and I feel like I should be able to do it.
I would say you will be able to. I mean, there's going to be certain things like that, like in those specific instances. But like, you know, I had like a frozen shoulder last year. Mm-hmm. And like, I would be like, you know, I need to move it up. And I couldn't. But like the second, like I would drop it back down, and then I would like do something different, and I would able to do it better. So it's really like retraining our brains to do things that we used to do. We just have to do it a little differently, I guess.
So how long did it feel like it took you to retrain?
It's ongoing.
Yeah, I'm still doing it, but like, it's just something I feel like you'll get used to. Like I had the drop foot, and yeah. I still do. Like if my meds are like, if I'm going down on meds, I can tell it's like there, but I feel it there. So I like think to myself, okay, pick it up. And same thing, like even like right now, you'll see me all like randomly like stretch up because I feel myself hunching over. And that's what causes the end of the day, my shoulder pain, because of my shoulder blades. So it's like, I don't know. You just start to create these like natural, not natural cues, but you just start to cue yourself, but you just, mm-hmm. It's more about like self-awareness, I think.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. So you've been diagnosed, what, three months now?
3 months?
44 days.
Okay.
Not that I've been counting.
Okay. Talk to us about your journey up to the point. Have you started medication? Are you not doing it? Started it?
My neurologist, because of my other tremors too, he put me on, and I never say it right, propranolol.
Pramipexole.
Pardon?
Pramipexole?
No.
Propranolol. Erica would be able to say it. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So that's all that I'm on right now. My neurologist has said that he wanted to get all the tests done. I'm seeing him again on the 28th, and then he wants to send me down to, this you might edit out, but University of Michigan Hospitals.
Yeah.
So because I know where you folks are.
No problem.
The idea is, what he was saying is, let's have them see what you're looking like, you know, without a lot of medications yet. So I'm not on much of anything.
Yeah. And, you know, for the first year, almost the first year exactly, I refused to take it. And then my dystonia got so bad that I was like, why am I fighting this?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Jess is more open into it.
I was just like, give me whatever I need. But I was on a dopamine agonist, and that did not go over very well for me. It was fine in the beginning, but then the more I increase, that's when the addictive nature, the addictive symptoms start to kick in, side effects, I guess.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm worried about too, but.
Yeah. So what's your like emotional state right now? Like, what are you thinking?
Roller coaster, you know, I'm, sometimes I'm very much blasé about it. Sometimes I'm very down about it. One thing that I know you folks have discussed about, you recently had the two individuals from the gym and talking about how teary-eyed that people get over absolutely ridiculous things. And yeah, yeah, exactly.
Every day.
It's being weepy is, you know, yeah, sometimes I'm just weepy about it.
It's a new normal.
But you know, I've been pretty selective on who knows so far. I haven't told, I've told close friends, and mm-hmm. that's really, really about it at this point. And I don't quite know why. So that's part of what this is about, is there's not many more ways to publicly come out than to do something like this, right?
Yeah. Coming out party.
Yeah. We all have our coming out parties.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what this was too. When you offered it, it felt like it was a nice way to do it. The way I told my friends was through a text, and it was a because I think that's what you had done.
I did that too.
yeah. And so I signed up for one of the Michael J. Fox 5Ks. I'm going to do a virtual one because where I am, there's the closest one is Chicago, which is about a 4+ hour drive.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a virtual one. So I sent it out with everybody as, hey, I'm raising money for Parkinson's. And put the link in, and then I said, and here's why. So that was my way of trying to do it. And I tried to be a little, throw in some, you know, a little bit of jovialness in there to mm-hmm. let everybody know that I'm not, you know, curled up in the corner crying. So
I think I've said this, if you listen to the podcast, I've said it before, but the doctor that told me this, I saw him not too long ago, and I said, thank you. He kind of looked at me and was like, for what? I go, because when you diagnosed me, the one of the first things he said to me was, you go on and you go ahead and live your life, or you go home and sit in the corner of the couch in a ball, and 20 years from now, you're going to say, why didn't I live my life?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, ever since, you know, when he said that, I never hesitated. I just,
mm-hmm.
you know. Now, the one thing I will say is I think I've also said this before, like, throughout the first year I was diagnosed, every single thought was Parkinson's. I couldn't get it off my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think you'll probably feel that if you haven't already. Like, it just consumes you. That doesn't last forever. I mean, it could, but you have to, and at some point tell yourself to say, like, okay, if it's consuming you, it's probably because either the medication or whatever the therapy regimen you're doing isn't working. So you're constantly thinking about it. I mean, I still, like, mine is, it's still pretty, cause I'm at the point of, you know, am I going to get DBS soon? Yeah. Am I just staying on medication? So I'm pretty well aware of my Parkinson's on a daily basis. Whereas for a few, like, I feel like for a while I was going on, and it was like, it is what it is. Like, cause I was having good moments, you know? But yeah, like Brian said, and this is why, I don't know if you saw that we have our nonprofit, we have a kit that you can order and we give out for free. And the biggest thing that I love in there is that this is what Karen made me put in there, like the big bright colors that one page says you are not alone. Then you flip it over and it says Parkinson's does not progress overnight. So like where, I don't know if you had the same thought, but like, I feel like we all, when we hear Parkinson's, we all think, am I going to be in a wheelchair by the end of the year? And it's like, no, that's not how this works.
I definitely had that. And for the last, you know, 45 days, I've listened to, I was not usually a big podcast person, but I've listened to so many bloody podcasts mm-hmm. and they're only about one thing, right? They're only about Parkinson's. I've gone through Michael J. Fox's autobiographies. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been doing all of that stuff. And that's, so, you know, Brian, I do remember hearing multiple times on the podcast about how you had said that, you know, it just consumed you. And then you made that decision. And that's actually been helpful. So one thing I hope the two of you realize is how helpful these actually are to other people.
Oh, thanks.
Because hearing you say that makes me feel like, okay, this is more normal. You know, mm-hmm. I'm feeling somewhat obsessed outside mm-hmm. of work and other things that, you know, this has become my hobby, not an enjoyable one, but it's become my hobby. And knowing that you got out of it makes me feel better about it. You know, that's my way out of that as well.
You might cry. No, but I mean, I think that is, I love that you brought that up. And I love that you reminded us of that piece, because not only does it, is it hard for you as an individual to like, okay, I need to get out of this. What I learned from my standpoint, and this was, I was doing it for another reason of talking about like Parkinson's and the podcast and the nonprofit, because I was trying to show my family and like my husband, like, even though I went to work part-time, I'm still contributing and it's exciting. And, but after a while it wears on them, you know? So my husband's like, do you have to talk about it all the time? You know, he's like, I do know that it's a constant reminder. He's like, but I still see you as my wife and just you as you, you know? So making sure that, and this is where we always go back to having a Parkinson's community of, you know, being able to find a group of, you know, whether it's, if it's virtual or in person, because we can quickly talk to each other, get the questions out, get our frustrations out, and then, you know, be done, feel like you were heard, versus family that it's like, because honestly, like I could complain every single day. And I do. I probably complain to Melissa, or I complain to you, or, you know, people at the gym, but, you know, not doing that to family, because it just gets, you know, tiring.
And that's a hard part for where I am. So I'm in the middle of Michigan, mm-hmm. and smaller town. I went to one of our local hospitals had a Parkinson's support group. And so I was like, oh, great. I'll go down there. And
no, don't do it.
Oh, well, it was two people.
Yeah.
Both of them care partners, both of them probably 25 years older than I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, this isn't helpful, you know? And that's, I think that's a hard part for some of us who live in more rural areas, who don't, you know, Columbus, bigger area, you know, I absolutely know zero other people.
So just wait, because when you start talking about it, people come out of the woodwork. I mean, I remember when I was first diagnosed, I'm like, I knew one person, and it was my uncle's dad, like, that had Parkinson's. And I just learned about it like a year or two before that. And after that, I was like, I don't know anybody else. Oh, and then my husband, one of our friends from college, his dad had Parkinson's too. And like that was it. And I'm like, I felt so alone, so isolated. And then I found the gym, and then I met all these people with Parkinson's, and I'm like, okay, awesome. But then I was like, but I don't know anybody my age, or anybody like who like is female, you know, like all these things, someone who's a mom, someone who's working, like then you want to get really, really specific.
Has twins.
I need all those things. But so once I put myself out there, like, you know, I did like a social media post, same as you did, like, hey, we're doing a walk. And here, you know, here's why. Like, literally I was getting like text messages or emails of like, oh, like my mom has Parkinson's, or my neighbor has Parkinson's, or my sister's brother, whatever, you know, like all this stuff. And then slowly but surely, it's like you almost started to create and cultivate like your own community. So it's almost like a sleepy disease until you start to talk about it. And why it's still not talked about, I don't know. But that's one thing that we're trying to change. Right?
That's it. It's a secret life.
Secret life. It's a secret. It's not a secret anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's where I've been nervous about putting it on social media, you know, putting it on texts to everything fine, the fundraising page for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. But it's still a little hard to do it, you know, just blah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm having trouble with that.
And it's, you have to still remember you're still like fresh.
Yeah, I'm a neophyte. Yeah.
So you definitely, you know, there's still time. And it's what I would encourage you to do, and others that are in this situation, is, you know, if your mindset is there, I've always looked at talking about it as empowering. So a lot of people will come to me and they're like, you know, I'm, you know, are you sure you want to talk about this? I'm like, I have a podcast that I talk about my entire life. I'll talk about anything. But, you know, I'll tell people, like, before I'm about to present or if I'm on a call and I'm very dyskinetic, I have no problem putting it out there to say I have Parkinson's. I'm starting to get away from the, oh, it's, you know, because I'm like, I don't want that. But I'm saying it, and I like doing it now because now I get to educate people because they're like, oh, I would never have thought you would have Parkinson's. I'm like, well, yeah, well, Parkinson's does, you know, happen to this, this, and this, and this is what we deal with. So I might not look like it, but it's happening internally. So I use it as a way to educate because to me, the more people that are educated, you know, the better off hopefully everybody else will be.
I think once you get on some, and whenever you decide to, or your doctor decides to get on some kind of the medication regimen, that's going to help some relieve some of those symptoms that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that. You know, it's, I have been a little torn about talking about it at work. I've told a couple people at work, but, you know, I'm sitting in a meeting and my hand is just, you know, mm-hmm. bouncing on the table.
Yeah. Do you sit on it?
Pardon?
Do you sit on it? Like, I always put my hand under my leg.
I do try and do that, but sometimes I wonder, am I just bringing more attention to what I'm doing now, you know? And it's been tough to know whether I should or not. And so I know, you know, you folks have talked about that. And Brian, you were talking about it. A couple of times about transitioning from one job to another and, you know, waiting until you're in the position to talk about it. So it's, and, you know, I'm at a university. It seems like it shouldn't be something I need to worry about, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that if any place is going to be accepting, it should be an institution. We have a medical school. So, yeah, you know, but it's still a little hard.
Yeah. It's hard to, like, I mean, but no, but it is, it's hard to open up like that, you know, because again, whether you feel like or care that people do this or not, you know, people are going to look at you different. And like, that was the thing. I'm like, so when I shared it at work again, in just like a broader way, but I work for a pharmaceutical consulting company. So I'm like, again, I knew it was one of those companies that I'm like, of course they're going to get it and understand. But what was even better is to tell them, you know, up front before, I mean, they knew stuff was going on anyways because of, you know, just what they were able to see on a daily basis because it was before COVID. But being able, one, to be open about it, it's all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I don't feel like I'm hiding anything anymore. I could just be me, you know, whereas like before, you know, I have withheld it from, you know, telling my kids right away because they were little. And then, you know, some other people. So I always felt like I was holding in some secret and I didn't like that. And then once it's like, now that everybody knows, it's like, it's just me, you know, it's like, I still was doing my job as a VP of marketing. I did step back on my own because I wanted to, but you know what I mean? It's like, and I'm still like active in doing these things. And I love, you know, people being able to see, like, just because I have Parkinson's doesn't mean I'm done, you know?
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to make sure I tell myself is I don't want it to be where I'm ashamed of it, mm-hmm. you know. It's not something that we've done most of the time. You know, I played hockey in high school, a little bit in college, so I probably had a couple of concussions, but, you know,
yeah.
that's probably not, you know, the genesis of it. But yeah, I've been trying to tell myself that I'm not going to feel bad about having it, that I don't want to find myself embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's a little bit of a juxtaposition between not, you know, coming out and just telling people at work, but, you know, yeah, trying to have those feelings too.
But what I would tell you too, and I've told a couple of people this, when, you know, apathy is definitely something a lot of people struggle with, if they just all of a sudden they're, and I did it too. I'm like, I just don't care. Or I just don't want to do anything. I just want to sit here. And it was almost like, I never had a depressive personality, but I'm like, I think that this is what depression would feel like. And it would sometimes last for a couple of days. But then all of a sudden, like, you know, it would like literally feel like it like lifted. And I was like, huh, like, I feel like I'm more clear and I don't have that fog over me. But then it would like come back like a month or two later. And then I finally realized, I'm like, okay, stop fighting the feelings or the emotions that I'm going through. Just like, let it happen. Let it take its course for a couple of days. And then I should be able to, you know, come out of it, or like give yourself that grace, you know, cause there are going to be like those ups and downs, and that's just, you know,
living within it.
Yeah. Living within it.
Instead of fighting it.
What was your, when you were diagnosed, what information did the neurologist share with you as to, like, you know, things that you can do or any resources? Was there anything?
Nothing.
Oh.
Basically, I got, you know, they did the motor function tests and everything, right? And said, well, you know, we think you have Parkinson's, mm-hmm. you know, we can either, you know, would you like to get a DAT scan? It's very good at saying, yes, you have it. It's not very good at saying, no, you don't necessarily mm-hmm. have it. So, you know, and I said, yes, then I want, you know, I'll do the DAT scan. They had already done the MRI and said, okay, so it's, you know, nothing worse. Yeah. The MRI was a weird situation, right? Because that's where it's like, you're cheering for Parkinson's because
yeah.
it means it's not a brain tumor, right?
Right.
Or
right.
MS.
Yeah. And that's what that we do talk about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they've been doing, you know, kind of little bits at a time, but they haven't really given me any advice, any indication. And I'm hoping that's what's going to happen at this last meeting. And then sending me down to U of M hospitals to go to their movement disorder clinic. So I think that the neurologist is kind of waiting mm-hmm. for them to have a bigger role in it.
Okay, so you're not seeing a movement disorder specialist yet?
Yeah, no. There's the closest one is hour and a half away.
Okay. So. Okay. Yeah, the movement disorder specialist, you know, I'm hoping will give you information like exercising. I'm sure you've seen enough on our episodes now that exercising is really important. So feel free to join us via Zoom.
Yeah, you can Zoom in.
Yeah. But yeah, how much exercise is important, and you know, your diet is important. That's just something I wish I was better at. I totally overlook that, but it should. Yeah, it is what it is. But so exercise and socializing. So having a community, whether it's your current friends and a, you know, group of Parkinson's friends too, just to keep that socialization, socializing and exercising are like the two biggest things besides medicine that you can do for yourself.
It's yeah. You know, I feel like I've got a good couple of groups of friends, and you know, these are some of the few people I've told about my diagnosis. And so we get together relatively often, at mm-hmm. least, you know, there's a brew pub out here. So we go for after work beer, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
I did start exercising again. It had been, you know, down in our basement, we've got a rowing machine and free weights and mm-hmm. a treadmill, incline treadmill and stuff. So I started doing that again. That's one of the hardest things though, is just the dedication to do that, you know?
Okay.
And
that's where having that community having people hold you accountable. Hey, you know, I didn't see you at the gym yesterday, or hey, I didn't see you last week.
I know. How about I keep mm-hmm. going to the gym and I'm wearing workout clothes and I never make it inside the actual gym. So I'm waiting for Melissa to like scream my head off, but I'll be done with that from like a work standpoint soon. But that's very true from like having a community, because you know, making sure that you are exercising. I remember the first boxing class I ever went into, because I used to do that when I was first diagnosed, because it was right near my house. And the one Parkinson's guy, he's like, you know what? My wife told me, this is your new job. This is your job. You have to come here, you know, every week or whenever it is. And because doing so will slow the progression. And it just keeps you, the keeping moving is just, there's nothing else like it. I mean, you have to. And you're doing it for yourself today, but you're more so doing it for yourself, for your 5-year self, for your 10-year self. Mm-hmm. So I got to get to the gym.
I need to get more.
So what else, anything else that you want to share that for those brand new diagnosis, because there are a lot of people that do watch this that haven't been diagnosed yet or on they're in the process of being diagnosed. So what would you tell them? Or questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some questions for you folks.
Oh, sure.
You know, one of the things that I really feel was waiting didn't help. You know, I wish I would have done it. You know, if I would have done it when my hand tremor, resting tremors really started getting bad, I would have, you know, be a year and a half, 2 years farther along than where I am. You know, so I wish I wouldn't have been using the excuse of my essential tremors to say, oh, it's just that. And I'll be honest, even when I went in to and did the motor tests, I was absolutely sure they were just going to tell me, oh, it's just the tremors you've had for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of a body blow when they said Parkinson's. I'd been convincing myself for a long time that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing that I really would encourage anybody to do is not wait. There's no point in waiting. And I wish I wouldn't have. But what do you know, knowing where you two are now, what do you wish you knew, you know, a month and a half in?
That's what my box says. Our kit says what we wish we knew. I wish I knew to use an electric toothbrush right away. So I don't know if you have one or not.
I just use my shaky hands.
So, we're gonna ship you one of our kits because there's an electric toothbrush in there. That was one big thing for me. And again, it's simple, but I wish I knew that, and I wish I knew right away that it's like I'll actually feel better in the future than I am today.
Right.
So when I was diagnosed, I had a knot like the size of a fist in my calf. My toes were curled. I could not separate my toes. If I consciously try and I couldn't separate them. My leg was always in pain. I wasn't, you know, using my arm. I did have tremor, but it wasn't terrible. And then, you know, and then again, like all the apathy or whatever, all the stuff that comes with it. Then come, you know, I'm 5 years in, almost 6 years in, and I feel better than I think I did 6 years ago. Because I'm exercising, because I'm taking the medication that's helping with the symptoms, and I'm just also then being aware of it. Because I'm telling you that leg pain and the dystonia, that's hard. So knowing that I don't want to say you get better, but you learn how to live with it and learn how to, you know, if you need to go to physical therapy, if you need to go to occupational therapy, like there's things that I never would have done had I not been diagnosed. You know what I mean? So again, it's not that it goes away and it's getting worse. It's a progressive disease, but I know what to do. What do you think?
That was a good one.
Thank you.
For me, it's one of the things that everything cycles. So like I used to have a dropped foot. One day it just went away. I used to get pain in my shoulders. One day it just went away.
But you did do stuff for it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying everything cycles through. It's not consistent. You know, so whatever you're feeling today, you may not feel tomorrow. It doesn't mean it's going to stay away because it'll come back. But for me, that's the way I talk to a lot of people at the gym that have had surgery on knees and shoulders and wrists. And I'm like, and they're like, well, I had surgery or I had knee replacement, but it didn't help. I'm like, no, because part of the disease, it's not, it probably wasn't your knee to begin with. It's part of the disease that was causing the pain. Not that I'm a doctor.
Yeah. But, Dr. Brian.
But
I agree. Cause my sleep is even like cyclical. How do you say that?
Cyclical.
I used to, you know, I have podcasts where I was up at 2-3 a.m. like all the time, like every night, and
that to me
now I'm fine.
That to me was the worst part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The sleep. I was doing the same thing you're doing. Of course, I had no problem falling asleep. It was staying asleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a hint. Gummies.
I can fall asleep 5 minutes after my head hits the pillow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know darn well between 3 and 3:30, I'm going to be wide awake.
Every other Parkinson's patient is too. It's amazing. Everyone's like, I wake up at 1 or 3. And then, it's like, why are we waking up all around the same time?
I tell you, I mean, gummies. That's what works for me. I would still wake up, but I would fall right back asleep. I just roll over, and you're not trying to take high dosage, but if you go into one of those facilities, they'll tell you exactly what you need. But I know it's legal there in Michigan as well, but that's what worked for me.
And napping works for me.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of afraid as an adult maybe not everybody, but as an adult to take I can't nap, I'm busy, I got to do this or I got to, no, your body, you're up from 3:30 in the morning. So you need to rest. And cause your tremor, my body gets so tired cause you can't see it right now, but my legs are completely stiff and shaking. So my legs are I'll be exhausted, but I feel it, but I don't feel it. So it's but your body just needs that break.
Yeah, it is interesting how the tremors in your hands, your muscles are just getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super encouraging to hear both of you say, it's progressive degenerative, but it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
The exercise and the medication helps because, one of the things which I was kind of feeling was, okay, this is the best I'm ever going to feel again. And then tomorrow will be the best I will ever feel again.
Yeah.
And,
don't think that.
I had a couple of friends who are doctors and they were telling me, that's how you're feeling right now. It's not, you're not on medications or anything like that. But that's an encouragement to hear that because it's the progressive degenerative words are not encouraging.
They're not fun. The other thing too, that nobody told me in the beginning is, just be prepared that your medications are a constant change. So I was on Ropinirole for the first 2 years, but even that from a dosing standpoint, I was on, a low dose. And then 3 months later, it was increased. And then 3-4 months later, it was increased. And then we tried something, added something else to it or whatever. And then 2 years in, I completely got off of that. And then I went on carbidopa levodopa. And then, went up on that and then had to scale back down and went on a controlled release of carbidopa levodopa. And then, so it's always going to be shifting. So just keeping a journal for yourself so you know, what's working, what side effects you have, how you feel on them. Because again, I can look back at where I started and I was, in a lot of pain at that point because I had no medication. And then for the first, after a year, 2 years, I felt good. Because the medication was working, and then it kind of, then I had other issues with the medication. So then I went down, and then I got back on different medication and it went better. It's going to be in flux. So you just have to just know that going in, and, it's nothing that you have to worry about, but it's just, don't think that it's abnormal. Oh my God, I have to change again. It's just constant.
Yeah. That's something that feels surprising. I don't think most people would think that would be the way it would work because, you feel like, okay, the disease presents itself relatively constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems I would have not felt that. I would have felt like I'm doing something wrong or things are getting much worse if I'm changing, if my medicine was changing all the time. I would feel like, oh, this can't be good. Something's really going bad now. So this is the type of stuff which is exactly what I'm interested in, mm-hmm. and why I really wanted to chat with you folks is because, again, feeling like I'll do what I can to try and find a Parkinson's community here, but it's probably going to be a little difficult. And so not having mentors, if you want, you folks can serve as mentors for people going through this disease, mm-hmm. through the podcast and everybody that you bring on it. And that's a fabulous service because it's one of the easiest ways for me to learn what's what's going on and with my body and what I can expect.
Yeah,
so.
That's great. Well, there's two things I do want to mention. The Michael J. Fox Foundation, they have a buddy network. Mm-hmm. And I've had people reach out to me and connect with me that way. So they try, like, if you put yourself on the buddy network and say, like, what you're looking for, if you want somebody, it's like a dating app.
A dating app.
But it has to, like, the person has to accept it before you guys can even email each other. But if you're like, I'm just looking for another Parkinson's person in this, you know, in this location, maybe it's like that. Mm. Then they can try and find a buddy for you. The other thing is the Parkinson's Foundation. If you ever have any questions, like anything, they have a hotline. We're actually going to have them on the podcast next month. They have a hotline that's available. You can call it, and it's certified, you know, nurses and mm-hmm. Pharmacists or whomever they are, nurse practitioners, and they'll answer any questions that you have to the best of their ability. About Parkinson's, but they might even have like information on, you know, there are so many small groups of Parkinson's communities that you might not be able to find online, you know? Yeah. So it's like, how do you just, you know, learning about all the different pieces? Cause I bet you any money, somebody's going to say, I live in Central Michigan, you know, what part are you in, from this podcast? Cause that's happened before too.
Yeah. That would be great. You know, cause it does feel like an isolating disease.
Yeah.
If you let it, it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you just need to start your own community.
Well, that's what Martha said in the last podcast. You just posted start your own table.
Yeah, she said. Yeah, the podcast that we just posted last night. She said, "Don't try and get a seat at their table. Just create your own table." So like, okay.
Yeah, it's not a common disease. I know it's the most rapidly growing one, but
yeah.
You know, it still doesn't feel like there's that many people. Because, again, you know, you had mentioned you hardly knew anyone. Brian, did you know anybody before you got diagnosed, really?
I don't think. Michael J. Fox.
But did you know somebody?
No, but I mean, that was
my... Did you call Michael?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that was my exposure to Parkinson's. Yeah. And, you know, I've said it before, like, I didn't know what I was getting into. Because even after I got diagnosed, like, what is this, a Z-Pak? Is this a, you know, shot of penicillin? You know, and no, it's not. And even after it got diagnosed, it didn't sink in that this is what the battle you're going to face looks like.
But I will say, just because of the nature of the progression of how the disease works, I don't know. I just feel like you grow into it. Like, mm-hmm. versus, you know, and I hate always feel bad making this comparison all the time, but I have a friend who has ALS, and you know, every day, you know, something is not working. It took me 4 years in for like my shoulder to start hurting. You know what I mean? Like it's, you grow with it. So it's not like all of a sudden going to hit you one day and you're like, oh, I'm going to have masked face like Brian. And then there's things that you can do to either prepare for that or just know when it does happen. You know, there's, we're going to be talking to somebody about like the, like singing, like a voice project. Mm-hmm. And Steve does that a lot. So if you have like vocal cord issues, or swallowing issues, you know, there's dance, that's the other thing you can look up is, you know, not like look up.
He does look like quite the dancer.
No, I'm just saying like, but like.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
But if you look up like Parkinson's, not even just communities, but there's like Parkinson's voice, Parkinson's, mm-hmm. Parkinson's dance, sorry. Parkinson's art, Parkinson's like something, boxing, whatever. Like, cause again, just like even just trying to search up certain terms, like you'll be surprised as to like what might come up, but doing that. And then the last thing that I do want to say before I forget, is never underestimate what stress can do to your symptoms. Because it's, everybody thinks, or at least in my mind, I think of stress as a negative, right? Like you're like, oh, I'm stressed out. It's not just that. Like I go to my daughter's basketball game, I'm not stressed, I'm super excited for her, and I'm like, wait, like all, like going all the way around. And I'm going crazy. Like my body can't stop. So it's not stress. It's just that that does take effect and does have an impact on your overall symptoms, your cognitive health, as well as your physical symptoms. So,
and that's one of the other things I wanted to ask about, if you don't mind, is it was perfect segue. I can't remember the word. I feel like that happens more and more often, you know, and
yeah,
I'm laughing because I thought I was losing my mind. And the neurologist, the movie, just is like, Brian, we all do that.
Yeah.
I can come up with a TV show. I could tell you all the names of the actor, the actresses. I couldn't come up with the name of the comedy show that I was trying to think about. I could tell you everything about the show. And he's like, yeah, that's just happens. So everything.
But do you feel like it happens to you more often?
Because I think we notice it more. I don't think we noticed it before.
But I think it does happen more often. I mean, I don't think it's like huge, but I definitely, I know I catch myself, and I never used to be like that as much. Yeah.
No, I think so too. But I also think that before when you did it, you didn't have anything to blame it on.
Well, sure. Yeah, it kind of goes back to that where I feel like I can blame everything on Parkinson's now because almost anything that happens to you feels like it's that. But that's been one of my biggest concerns, is more of cognitive issues, you know, and that to me is the most scary part, even though I know it's not like traditional dementia or anything like that. But the cognitive concerns, that's something that terrifies me more probably than almost anything else. And, you know, as a scientist, it's the thought of not being able to think as clearly is really terrifying for me. And that's a big fear. And it doesn't sound like, from what I've heard, that a lot of the medications help with some of the brain fog issues or anything like that, or forgetfulness, or, you know, that type of stuff.
That's where exercise and reducing your stress plays a huge part, because again,
DBS,
stop. when I had a neuropsych test done 3 years ago, when I just stopped working full time, like I literally took it right at that time. And then I just had it done again a couple months ago. So I haven't been working full time for 3 years. I've been working part time. I've had no direct reports. I'm doing just project work, you know, whatever. And my neuropsych test, my executive function increased.
Really?
And, yeah.
Well done you.
Yes, I know. So that's another segment we have on. It was just a couple episodes ago. I had that doctor come on to talk about it because it's like, you know, he's like, yeah, if you reduce stress, you're going to improve those things. But then it's also exercise. So at the gym, Melissa will, you know, she would always have us say like, or say shout out words that begin with the, you know, letter Y. And I remember like doing exercises and I'm like, yellow. Yeah, like why can I not remember another Y word? And then one day, like a year or two later, it like all of a sudden, like she said something similar, and I was like naming off all this stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, I like know all these words. It's, you know, so it's practice. But so it's reducing your stress and exercising and practicing those things. So
yeah, that's encouraging at least. You know, I, like I said, that's probably more of a bigger fear. You know, the other fear I've had, and, you know, goes back to the, I'm going to be in a wheelchair in a year, is, you know, the kind of major events, major things that my wife and I had planned out, you know, and thinking, okay, well, do I have to accelerate this now? Do we have to do, you know, this 10-year plan in 5 years now, if I'm hoping we're going to be able to do it and stuff. And that, I guess, you know, one of the other difficulties for me is the uncertainty of the disease and the progression rate of it and everything else, where, you know, if you know one person with Parkinson's, you know, one person with Parkinson's, well, I'd almost rather know that it's going to do this. This is the rate of increase.
Yeah.
And I'm going to know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The uncertainty is unnerving as well for me.
Yeah, and we're all different. And that's like you said, you never know. I'm 9.5 years in diagnosed, probably 3 years before that, that I had symptoms. I'm still working. I'm still exercising. You know, a wheelchair is hopefully far off, if in sight at all. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah.
It really is a matter of how well you, you know, keep up with the things that you can control. You know, so I remember that first year my husband and I were like, okay, let's go to, you know, New York City. We'll just take a trip, just the two of us. And there were points that I was like tired or like my leg hurt, but it was still like, I just got on medication probably a few months before that. So I was still already dealing with the dystonia. Now I'm like, I could walk circles around that person, you know, 6 years ago. And so I don't have a problem, you know, when we go on vacations. He loves that I like to nap now in the afternoon because that's something that he likes to do as well if we're on the beach. But yeah, I mean, we thought of that too, obviously, to say like, okay, am I going to obviously stop working sooner? Which, you know, you don't have to. Like Brian's still, you know, going strong. Or, you know, do you want to get those, the travel things in? So we did plan a trip to Italy. Cause I'm like, I don't want to, like, it's already been 5 years. So I'm like, I don't want to wait another, you know, however many years. And it's like, I don't want to trip on a cobblestone or like, it's like, I want to be safe and think about that for myself. But everybody at our gym, I mean, come wintertime, they are out. They're out in Florida. They're taking boat trips. They go on cruises. And these are people that, you know, are in their, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. Some have had it for 10 years. Some have had it for, you know, 5 years. It's a wait and see, which, you know, does suck. Mm. Keep planning what you're planning.
Yeah. Yeah. That's encouraging. You know, like I said, it's uncertainty doesn't always sit well with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this seems to be one of the most uncertain diseases that I've ever known about, even. So
yeah, the best thing you could do is just like take note, and then in like 3 months, 6 months, if you're like, I feel the same as I did before, that's how it is. Like it's not, you're not gonna, like, nothing's gonna, you know, snowball with this disease.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually an interesting idea too, is to, I should have thought of it, but I haven't thought about trying to keep a record.
Like I said, yeah. I'm going to give you a kit. In our kit, we have a journal,
yeah.
And we have the toothbrush,
a water bottle,
a water bottle, because you have to drink a lot of water with your medication. Take your medication at the same time every day. There's a nice, easy little book to read. It says it's a kid's mm-hmm. guide, but I used it for myself. Yeah, so we're going to send that to you.
Well, that certainly appreciated.
Yeah.
And this has been, you know, a huge help just to kind of feel. Like I said, it's for me, it feels very, I feel very alone sometimes. Not that my wife isn't supportive, and she's always asking me how things are going, and she's super with it, but it's still not the same of, so you two are now officially the first two people I've ever spoken to with Parkinson's.
Aww.
Yes.
So, yes, you're first, Brian.
No, that's great. And I mean, honestly, that does make a big difference. And I remember my friend Erica from Florida and Jill from Washington, they're part of my young onset group that we just found each other, you know, on online. But they came down to the annual walk that I have in September. And it was, you know, our first time seeing all three of us in person. I've seen Erica now for the past couple of years, but when I met Erica for the first time, I'm like, you're like the first, you know, female Parkinson's, you know, person. Actually, Samantha probably was though too, but it makes such a difference. And it's like, Jill came out and she was like, she's like, literally, I feel like this whole weekend, like my heart is full. Like, she's like, it was just exactly what I needed. It's just weird that you feel like you need to have that physical like presence or something. So if you want to come to Columbus, September 14th.
It's Ohio.
It's fine. Just rent a car and don't use your
Michigan plates.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. One, for reaching out, and two, being very open at such a
vulnerable
time. Because, you know, we've been there but it's, that is, you know, just take time for yourself, mm-hmm. give yourself a little grace. And if you have questions, you know, just reach out. Like I email with people all the time. If I don't get back to you, it's just because I'm busy, but I will.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully you can make some connections there in Michigan, and if not, start your own community, and we'll mm-hmm. give you some, we'll have you be a trainer for PD Next Steps. You can start it up there.
Zoom in.
Yeah, you should zoom in.
You should get the link.
I did sign up for the free 30-day trial.
Yay! All right. Yeah. Melissa, so 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Sounds intimidating. Nah. You've talked often about the severity of the workouts, so, you know.
Go at your own pace.
Yeah.
Well, nobody can see, so I'll be good.
There you go. Unless she makes you go off camera. Well, Brad, thank you again so much. Really appreciate the time that you gave us, and look forward to catching up.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me, and thanks to both of you for the podcast and everything else you're doing. Sometimes things might feel like they go unrecognized, but it really does help what you two are doing.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. In our last 30 seconds, I'll leave you with this. Whether you're newly diagnosed or have been diagnosed for a long time, there's always something that you can learn from others within the community. But for those that are newly diagnosed or just getting a diagnosis now, just know you are not alone. There are resources out there. There are people out there. They're just quietly keeping things a secret. But keep tuned into The Secret Life of Parkinson's, and we'll see you next time. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is produced by Melissa Carlson and Steve Brandenburg. To contact us, email info@thesecretlifeofpd.org. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not responsible or liable for any medical advice, diagnosis, course of treatment, or any other information obtained through this podcast. The information provided by The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. You are encouraged to consult a physician for a definitive diagnosis.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.